Blog Talk Radio.
You brought too many.
Thank you.
Good evening and welcome to Soul Tree Radio in the Raw. I'm your host, Michael Lewis Ingram. I know we've had a lot of sci-fi over the last 5 weeks. Those who indulge with me, thank you for sharing and thank you for listening and watching. And as always, we are proudly brought to you by BASNewsroom.com and the Instructors of the Black Athlete Sports Network. Get all the good shit, the who, what, when, where, why, and how, right now at www.BASNewsroom.com. Shout out to the members of the Brother Man Network who will be lining up as we speak. Now that we are home sweet home, back where we normally are. And among them, of course, my brother and my right-hand man, Gary Norris Gray. What's up, G?
Why, man? How you doing?
Was all good. Well, we waited a good time for this because it is now one of those times where it's a perfect storm. We are midway into the NFL season and the National Football League. Well, let me get off that soapbox for a hot second and say what I really want to say. Football's full of shit. It's one of the most racist sports out there in terms of gauging talent because they know they don't give a fuck about what color you are as long as you're not playing quarterback. Quarterback became the position, the team sports, where white supremacy is alive and well. And in the last couple of years, the brothers have said what they could about this with their play. The field generals, black quarterbacks, have come out of nowhere to put the intelligentsia in such a strain that they have to come up with a mealy-mouthed, weasel word description of how guys play to make it sound like, well, they're all right, but they're not all right. They don't like the fact that these black men are playing well. They do not like the fact that these black men are doing what they're supposed to, and they do not like the fact that these black men are being odd and succeeding. They're really their better to fail. We are better than Mr. Zell. Richie, can you hear us?
Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I just want to say, gentlemen, good evening to the Deacons for Defensive Justice. And I just want to say one thing. How about them Eagles? Yes, sir. Hey, what's that ass?
Yeah, how about them Eagles? We'll
now,
get into
that.
Jerry
Jones with the E&J, boy. He got the easy Jesus, man. I can't get nothing done with these niggas here. I say, son, every time them niggas in Philly get up in there, why is that can't put me with that Negro with the Philadelphia Eagles? I can't stand it. I can't help it. Somebody, give me a drink. Clean my mouth. I'm your ass whooping.
Hey,
what do a Republican Party and the Dallas Cowboys have in common? Both of them got that ass kicked last night.
How about that? How about that? But you know what, Reggie, you're not far wrong, because we've had for a long time a mindset of this is something black men can't do. We want you to do this, but don't do that. And, of course, it's always prefaced with that word, your friend of mine. But Reggie can do what he needs to do from sunup to sundown, but be a quarterback. Gary can do what he needs to do on a day-to-day basis, but be a quarterback. And my brother Tony McClain, who's just coming in, he can be an editor and do everything he needs to do and run a paper, but
he cannot be a black quarterback. Is the Mac there? T-Mac there?
I really don't appreciate you guys talking about my butt in public, man.
Turning the Mac. The Mac is in the house.
Really, 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 really bothers me that all of a sudden my butt has become, you know, a public domain.
Hey,
you
know what, T, I got one question. God bless Don Staley. I love what she said. And the young lady just did another reverse behind-the-back layup. I'm like, ooh, the sisters and freshmen are going to be making some noise this year. But, T, your thoughts about Don Staley saying that women need to be on other channels other than the mouth, the dirty rat.
I agree 1,000%. I agree 1,000%. It's, you know, as we've seen over the years, you know, women's basketball, you know, just gets more to me, at least on, especially on the college level, maybe more so on the college level than the WNBA, although WNBA is pretty good too. Absolutely. Because, I mean, I will say this, the mouse does a decent job in regards to that, but because the sport has grown, it needs more eyeballs. We need, you know, sadly we need to see Fox and all the other alphabet soup nations places show the game.
And when they can bring money in, that's what it'll take. You work with a pocketbook. A pocketbook is a very powerful tool.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. That's all the more reason why. Cause see, you know, look how long it took before the NHL finally got the deal that they really wanted. And it can happen for women's. It can happen for women's basketball. Now, granted, it is a regional sort of thing. Now, and look, yep. I'll be the first one to admit that I've got some bias because of where I live, because you know, although.
No.
It would be totally disingenuous of me to not say because I live in Connecticut, I probably watch more women's basketball than most folks. But see, I remember in high school we supported the girls' basketball as well as the boys' basketball. The thing is,
I hear we got Stanford Cardinal riding shotgun.
It's put it this way. In all the big cities, there are women's basketball fans. And see, a lot of it is the sort of thing where, look, contrary to popular belief, UConn isn't the only place where the men's and women's basketball team generates a hell of a lot of money.
True.
Y'all wouldn't have a lot of national championships, I can tell you that.
What a privileged view. Who saw the beginning of this? Back in the 1970s, with the backyard college, Mighty Mac.
Mm-hmm.
Mighty Mac, they go anywhere in this country, everybody would go see the Mighty Mac. They could be in Boston, Chicago, LA, wherever they went.
Sure. The thing, look, end of the day, you know, the biggest, to me, one of the biggest endorsements that women's basketball got years ago before he passed away was that, and however you feel about him or what have you, John Wooden, basically said that the better basketball, if you want to really watch basketball at its
fundamental
like that, it's women's basketball. Look, end of the day, the biggest difference, of course, is the above the above the rim. You're not going to see a whole lot of slam dunks or what have you. But fundamentally, it's like night and day. And to be quite honest, and you could take this for whatever, but I think you need to actually see it. To be honest with you, at times, especially if you get a good division, I shouldn't say just Division One, but if you get two good women's college games or either two teams or high school girls or what have you, a lot of times they're a hell of a lot more physical than the guys. And I'm talking about
the teams.
You know
what?
Because they can't play above the rim. And you know what? You're right. But see, here's the thing.
That can is
positive.
That dunks the ball.
But here's the thing. Not even the guys go above the rim all the time. You know, I mean, look. I do this every year, you know, around this time, or more so when the tournament comes up. I always just say, look, watch a woman's game of the tournament in the tournament, and then watch a men's game in the tournament. And I think, let's be totally honest. A lot of the negative stuff that the women get is from the same old white prejudiced loudmouth assholes that have never watched.
They don't know the game.
They only, unless there's something that's going to sexualize it or what have you, they're not going to. They don't care. They literally don't care about it. And now if a scandal breaks out, when you had the whole thing with LSU and Iowa, they were all on that because it gave gave them something that they wanted. It gave them. If they can ride into it like that, that's fine. But see, I've always said, and again, I admit my bias because I'm here and I covered them briefly. But my thing has always been, see, here's the thing. What I will always say is, when was the last women's game you watched? And then usually I get a lot of hemming and hawing and what have you. Look. It's very easy to just sit back and criticize something that you've never watched before. Fox, CNN, MSNBC has made a living out of doing that news-wise. But I would like to think that some of our other brethren from the sports world would actually get up off their lazy asses and watch the game, because what's Deion Church say? Ain't hard to find.
Hello.
I would rather watch three games of women's side NCAA and to watch three games of the men's side. You know why? I'm going to tell you why. The reason why I'd rather watch the women do one thing they don't do that guys do all the time is turn the ball over.
And see, that's where it goes back. That's where the fundamentals. This is going back to with the fundamentals. I mean, yeah. Look, sloppy game is a sloppy game. It doesn't matter the gender, but because the women's game is built more off of fundamentals, you're not going to get as many. And you're not going to get as many turnovers. You're not going to get as many turnovers. Now, I'm not saying you're not going to get as many.
But do you remember when Anne-Marie Gilbert was at her height at Virginia Union and they had the CIAA, her first year coaching Union against Shaw, and we had my man Curtis, who won a national championship with his ladies basketball. You had damn near more of guys in the damn gym watching, and when the young ladies were pulling up J's, they was in awe. Like the young lady from South Carolina did the behind-the-back pass, or the young freshman from USC. that took the game over by herself. They said, this is not a freshman. There's no way she'd be a freshman. Hey, AAU does a lot for the ladies as well as it does for the young men.
Look, good sports, good basketball, people are going to watch.
It's not a gender neutrality
sort of thing. If it's good basketball, it's good basketball. Now look, you're always going to have cynics and all that other stuff. But you know what? The hell with the cynics. Let's deal with the people. Let's talk about the people who actually want to watch the game,
Bob Ryan on line two.
Look. For them to continue to bash women's basketball and they literally, you can see, they will use UConn beating a team by like 60, 70 points and say that's the reason why women's basketball is lousy. Have you watched the please wait. I'm watching Kansas. I'm looking at some of the scores for tonight. Kansas is beating Northwestern State 85-43. You know, Southern's playing Texas. Texas is up 54-21. Yeah, that's great basketball.
Mm-hmm. Gentlemen, can I stop in? First of all, how's everybody doing this evening?
Hey, Patrick. What's up?
Hey, man.
A long time ago, a very long time ago when I had hair, and I was a pretty athlete. I graduated from Ohio State and played a lot of pickup basketball.
With all the guys.
So one day we had the old red gym. These three girls walked in and they called winners. They said, "We said winners for what?" So two of them played on women's. Three girls played on the women's basketball team, and they had two dudes. So they said, "Okay, we're gonna play." And the game was going to 11. We lost 11 to 5.
Was any hand checking going on, bro?
And we lost 11 to 5. And that opened my eyes because one of the girls was all American. And went to Georgia to play there. From that time on, I have a different perspective on women's basketball. And for 10 years, when the league first opened up, I covered the WNBA. And for those who are following Tony's critique of guys who lost their freaking minds, I tell them, put your monkey ass on the court with them and see what happens. And you can begin to appreciate how well they play. And anybody that says they can't has not seen them play and won't get on the court with them.
Absolutely. And remember that Martin series where Martin had the women's Olympic team and Don Stedman was there? Martin said, my leg, I'm hurt.
Yeah. And I've had the pleasure to interview two Olympic women's teams with, you know, Lisa Leslie and Dawn Stanley. I've interviewed them. I got them in storage. But those young ladies were also gracious, intelligent, knew the game, could bust your tail, and quite frankly, when they put their clothes, you'd like to hit on them. Leave that alone.
One of my favorite sports movies of all time is Love and Basketball. Now a lot of it has to do with Sanaa Lathan. But just the story in and of itself, it just, in many ways, it's the story of a lot of these ladies who played in the WNBA. And remember, this was the movie basically depicted what a lot of these women had to go through. They had to go overseas, and in many ways, it's still happening to a lesser extent. But again, it's again. What I would always tell folks who are so into bashing women's basketball, watch the game.
The hell it's a, Yeah.
Yeah, just watch a game. Because, see,
yeah.
if they're going to hem and haw about watching a game, then, see, you're more worried about keeping the stereotype up as opposed to actually seeing what's out there.
Insecurity, Tony. Insecurity in terms of being an athlete. Insecurity in terms of reporting and analyzing and understanding the game at another level. That's what it boils
down to. Exactly.
And I've seen, again, I covered the NBA, covered the Liberty for 10 years. Those were some balling children. And, I mean, they call brothers out in a heartbeat. Bring your ass on out here. I mean, I've seen this.
Sure.
Hey,
look. I know it probably will never happen because it has to do with logistics or whatever, but I would love to just see one year where the WNBA is playing during traditional basketball time.
It would get drowned out.
It probably would.
College, you have college football, playoffs, NFL, you know, and with all the marketing that's been done, it's kind of, you know, the best time. But, you know, I mean, what's interesting is to try to classify it as strictly a gender game. To me, I see basketball no matter what.
Exactly.
Right? You know, I love basketball to the point where, you know, I mean, I'll sit around and watch fifth graders play on a, you know, on a 6-foot hoop.
Mm-hmm.
But see, guys, this is it. The NBA has a gas gal waiting. The NBA, for example,
I go back to, you know, basketball when, and I know Patrick remembers when Ann Donovan was playing in high school.
Oh, Ann Donovan, yeah.
Jersey girl, you know what I mean?
Ann Donovan.
And, you know, when I was there, you know, she was the number one prospect, right? She was getting all those points. And I was 6'8", 6'10". I don't remember the cost. I played in the AAU tournament in Scotch Plains, New Jersey, Union Catholic High, Patrick, where it was an AAU doubleheader. You know, we played next, and I kept hearing about Ann Donovan. I mean, Blaise Jowski, right? You know,
Montclair State,
right?
That's it.
You know, Marcia Foster, I think she's coaching a team or something. She played at Seton Hall for a number of years. You know, I mean, these are like peers, but they were, to me, always they were women play basketball. Now, fast forward to the current tense in the current world, I mean, Ruthie Bolton Holyfield, right? You know, she's in this area where I'm at. You know, I've done clinics with Ruthie. We've had 3-point shootouts. I've never seen Ruthie as a women's basketball player's agenda. I've seen her as a basketball player. Yolanda Griffith, Tisha Pinichero.
Kara Lawson was out here for a number of years.
Doing camps with the Monarchs. Now I think she's coaching Duke, right? She was at ESPN for a minute. Pam McGee was my son's math teacher at the school she's going. She coached the girls' team. That's JaVale's mom.
Eric, I would have loved, out of the state of Connecticut, we had a player by the name of Tracy Claxton. She went to our rival high school, Wilbur Cross. Mm. And if the WNBA had been around after she was the player, after she was the MOP of the, I think, of the first NCAA women's tournament, she, you know, we'd be talking about her in the same. We'd be talking about her.
The women of Troy, when Cheryl Miller, the McGee twins, Pam was one of them, right? Her
greatest
out of Flint.
In my mind,
and the young lady that played with the Rockets, what was her name again? You know, the top player.
Talk about
not the Rockets, the Houston
Man.
Comets.
I
don't know why I can't remember him. She coaches Texas Southern now.
And you know
what? Some of the best basketball minds that I ever, you know, seen withdrawing the basketball were women basketball. I mean, so it's the game, man. You love the hoops. Now, you know, flag football is taking off across the United States, you know, in high school levels and this, that, and the other. But it's not, you know, tackle football, this, that, and that. But basketball is basketball. They still play on 10-foot rims. They use a smaller basketball.
Yeah.
All those things make sense. But the skill sets, and I love the comment, oh, they're fundamentally sound. Well, fundamentals is okay no matter what you play.
Guys, let me say something on this. If they packed up women, and I've seen this happen, packed up women in some of our fundamentals, get in the gym and have a shot-for-shot for males and female players at the top levels, you'd be surprised who wouldn't be.
Yeah, I mean, it's still basketball. This chick from Iowa, Caitlin Clark, she can fly hoop.
No joke.
I'm sorry.
She ain't a joke.
She can fly hoop. I mean, if you got game, you got game. You know what I mean?
Game.
I mean, is Dawn Staley, what's her name, Vanderveer, Stanford.
Yeah.
Pat Summer was one hell of a coach. I watched her practices and shit. I put up against anybody.
Absolutely.
Basketball mind-wise.
And you also doing
Valerie Stringer out of Rutgers. I mean, I put her basketball mind up against anybody.
Yes, he would.
Male or female.
Yes, he would.
I've never seen it. Yeah, these are women playing basketball, but to genderize it and to continue to title 90 and kind of obscure it on that level, that's, to me, Neanderthal shit.
Yeah,
you know, because the game is basketball.
100%. And did you see this girl on Dawn Staley's team now? The guard they got. The fact they're playing in Paris with a game that's promoted like it was promoted, and the girls from South Carolina played.
Iowa set an attendance record in their state. Ooh. They had an outdoor thing, and they just had an attendance record.
People.
That's my point. I mean, if you like the aesthetics of basketball, then the natural evolution is for people to be out there where they can get out flat out just fucking hoop. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, the thing is, everything's going to be fundamentals. The NBA can obscure fundamentals because athleticism is what it is.
True.
You know,
very
I mean,
true.
I mean, you can watch a high school game with no D1 recruits, right? I mean, anywhere in the United States, you may see 15 dunks in that game.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Right?
Hey,
there's no blue out there at all.
I mean,
this 5'9" kid just took off from the dotted line and did a triple reverse.
Can't shoot a jumper. Can't shoot a five-foot jumper.
You hear what I'm saying? You got these guys pulling up any and everywhere. So it's just a different kind of measurement, but you know, to me, basketball is basketball, and so I just love the game at every level. I can watch an NAIA game, you know what I'm saying, just as well as watching, you know, and the best players anywhere go at it, or we can shoot to the Rucker, we can shoot to the Blacktops anywhere in the United States. Some pick me up, hoop is hoop.
I believe it's the mutual enjoyment of the sport that gives basketball the advantage that way. But, and I got to say this because this is how it started, and we got my man Eric and Professor Fred in the house. Football is war. It's sexist, and it's classist. And the bottom line in all this is that when you play football, you're doing so with ulterior motives, always.
That's right. Somebody got to say.
Yes, sir.
That's the hippest shit I heard today.
Somebody
it's
got to
team
say.
It's a sport unlike no other. So that when the brothers play well, you get two responses. You either get white men who are butt hurt, or you get white men who are collecting money because they bet on the fucking game.
I mean, the 86 Bears sure weren't approaching football like a badminton contest.
Lord.
No, they weren't. And now the National Football League has to deal with the reality of the fact that the most lionized position is now property and exclusively black. Because the brothers are here to stay, and we didn't just move in. So right now, we got to give some love to the field general.
Yes.
Uh-oh. Get those together. Yeah, so Patrick Dobbs, right, he gets no snaps when he goes to Minnesota practice and he leads him to a win. What did they say about the system for that
Eric, you're stealing my thunder.
That's a perfect segue.
That's a perfect segue. Working in. We've got brothers who've been working. Now we have a quorum here. It is time to give some battlefield promotions.
Yes, sir.
They all came in as brigadier generals, but we got to rank and raise up some love to three guys in particular, and one of them is our brother Dobbs. Now, Dobbs gets teased because he's a rocket scientist, and he really is
literally
a rocket scientist.
Literally.
However, he can also play a little football, and he came in starting with the Arizona Cardinals, and he played well. Now, he played so well, it annoyed everybody. The trade deadline came, and Kirk Cousins got his ass hurt. He went to Minnesota. He learned the offense. I mean, learned. It wasn't just plays on a cheat sheet. He learned the offense in what was essentially 2 hours. 2 hours. And orchestrated a last drive comeback to defeat the opponent. Now, they always talk about the brothers that are too smart for their own good. I think when Myron Lowe was playing safety and he was a brain surgeon in
Wayne.
That's
right.
And Rose Scholar.
Yes, exactly.
He is Rose Scholar. Yeah.
And he went on
to
Dobbs hung around because he loved the game. I now move his rank up to that of Lieutenant General 3 stars because this brother came in. He was ready, and he whipped that ass. So,
the thing I love about Josh Dobbs and just this year's installment of the Field Generals, it gives you the spectrum of what black quarterbacks are all about, in a sense. You know, Dobbs, you know, you got to remember, this is Dobbs' 4th year in the league. And this is the most games that he's started because he's never actually been given the opportunity to play.
You think the Steelers can use him now?
And remember, and see, here's the thing you forget also, Mike. He didn't sign with Arizona until the last week of training camp.
Yeah, very late.
So again, it shows you his intellect, but it also just shows you that, you know, that his beautiful football mind as well. What's great about this year is you have the upper echelon guys. You know, you got Hurts, you got Mahomes, you know, coming off of, you know, the Soul Bowl. But you also have these young and upcoming guys like, you know, Stroud. I think Houston may win that division with a couple of breaks here and there.
Stroud's ball.
Or at the very least be a wild card. Even guys like Desmond Ridder, who's had his ups and downs, I think he's going to get his second chance because there's only, you know, Tyler Heineke can only take you, but so far.
You got that right. Brothers, I want to raise up our next candidate. He is playing for Patrick's beloved Cleveland Browns. And his name is P.J. Walker. Full disclosure, I saw P.J. Walker play at Temple. He was a bad motherfucker then. He was a very good player on an average team. Now, if he had played for, say, Alabama or in the SEC, he'd have gotten all kinds of love. Turns out, he managed to ride the crest of his head coach and got into the pros. He knocked around. He went to the XFL. He excelled there. He was their best player, arguably. And now came into a situation where he caught on and was holding the clipboard in Cleveland when Deshaun Watson got hurt again.
Mike, let me throw this in there. Let me throw this
in. Yes, please.
Actually, what happened, the Browns got smart through Andrew Perry. They redrafted a kid from UCLA. I think it's Nick McMillan.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Very good. And he was the third-team cornerback because the second-team cornerback was Dobbs. They made a trade for a seven-round pick with Arizona send Dobbs to Arizona because of the fact that the kid McMillan's playing so well, and they took out P.J. Walker and made him the third-team or the backup quarterback, okay? That's how it occurred. But P.J. played well.
You.
He played very well.
Thank you.
But you see, here's the case. Let's look at the broader scope of this. The reason why PJ and Dobbs play the way they play, they don't fit the model of what they want as a quarterback in this league.
Yeah,
that's
right.
The problem right there. Look at the freaking Jets. What they're going for? Their energy.
No, please.
Give me a break. You would never. Neither one of those teams. Are so established, are so marketing crazy that they wouldn't put either one on that team and they need somebody like that. However, Minnesota was in the straps and they brought him in. Dobbs, first of all, was with Pittsburgh, then came back to the Browns, then Pittsburgh cut him, Dobbs came back this year and played well in preseason. But the kid, the rookie from UCLA played so bad, they said, well, we got him. We got PJ Third who can back him up. And let's make a trade. And the rest is history. That brother
At the end of the day, the best Giants quarterback this year is on injured reserve, and it damn sure ain't
that right,
dude.
$14 million. But the bottom line is he was ready, and he's 3-0 when he's been on the field. Now, you can't ask for anything better than that. We promote him to Lieutenant General, 3 stars for General P.J. Walker. Last but not least candidate, because we have some honorable mentions, is from Ohio State University. Now, when the draft came out and they were assessing talent, they didn't like the fact that a lot of brothers were playing quarterback. They didn't like the fact that there was a lot of black faces in a lot of white places. And what they really wanted was a bully pulpit where they could piss on these guys. Where there were no Cam Newton to be picked from. And C.J. Stroud, Coleridge Stroud, rocked the house. Last weekend, and I mean last weekend, we saw probably the most glaring example of talent winning out, as with 46 seconds left against the very overrated, and I mean very overrated, Tampa Bay Buccaneers and their supposed star quarterback, Stroud came in there and rocked the house at one with a last-minute touchdown drive. It took him only 40 seconds to hit the end zone. 39-37. He now has 14 touchdowns and only one interception.
Mm-hmm. And it was a garbage time interception, too, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yep.
And Mike, wait till he gets some more help.
Oh, God.
I know.
I'll leave it at that.
The one thing that I was so afraid of when he got there was like, oh damn, he's going with a head coach that's a defensive coach, and I was getting images of Buddy Ryan those early years in Philly. Exactly. But I got to give D'Amico his credit. He, you know, I for the life of me, I don't know who the offensive coordinator is, but he's literally leaving him the hell alone and let niggas
leave. The guy can fucking play. I mean, leave him alone.
The biggest, the biggest obstacle most of these guys deal with is, are they going to have a coach that's going to play to his strengths, or are they going to try to or fit him into his quote-unquote system? And needless to say, he's let Stroud be, you know, he's let Stroud be his own man. Matter of fact, you've probably seen this better than I, Patrick. It looks like he took a couple of plays from OSU's
probably did, yes. Yes.
On there, man.
Yes, yes. And the thing about it, the kid, you know, one of the things that would piss me off initially about him, I had to straighten the guy out a couple of months ago about CJ and talk about what he couldn't do. I said, first of all, the guy was on the Heisman list twice, okay? He can just get there because he's just cute. Secondly, he was talking about, well, you know, PJ, you know, he should have ran more. I said, ran more? I said, let me ask a question. The first time he got in the game, he threw a 45-yard touchdown pass. Yeah, that's why I said, no, wrong. He ran for 75 yards for a touchdown. He can run, but he wants his arm to be his way to the league,
exactly.
And that's what he had.
That touchdown drive against Tampa Bay reminded me of General Wilson when he first came into the league.
Mm-hmm.
No wasted motion. He called two plays in the huddle, and he executed literally 75 yards in 40 seconds. Now, I dare anybody in the booth, in the press box, to go down there and do exactly what he did in the time that he did it. You know?
Mm-hmm.
What I can't stand are motherfuckers that don't know nothing about the motherfucking sport and will sit there and try to critique.
And Tony, you hit it right in the head, Tony.
Mm-hmm.
Tony, you hit it right in the head. We got too many coaches, too many guys in this league trying to change a guy's ability to fit their system, and it doesn't work. You want to sit there and tell me that Justin Fields can't play? Get
mm-hmm.
out of here.
That's the thing. That's the thing. Because and see, that, you know, that coach is the Walking Dead too, as far as I'm concerned. I thought nobody could be worse than Nagy, but apparently this guy came in and said, "Wait a minute, hold my beer. Let me be just as worse."
there's no doubt he's worse. Before we go further, I must give an honorable mention to my Eagles and our man Jalen Hurts.
Yes,
you know,
man.
When they chose him in the draft, they were going,
dogged him.
Since the draft, Jalen Hurts is 31-12. He has been in a Super Bowl. He scored 35 points in the Super Bowl.
And they grabbed Zach Wilson second round. Second pick.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They still win for him.
And he was a second round pick.
Meanwhile, Mike, Johnny Carson Wentz is on his fifth team now, I believe.
Oh,
yeah.
Lord.
He got signed the other day. Good.
Mike, you didn't say it with passion, Mike. You need to go ahead and bring it from the lungs.
Mike, if you said it with any more passion, it'd be blood coming through the speakers.
Hey,
just
going to
you
got
to
block
through with it, son. You got to block through with it. You got to make sure you get it from your lungs, son. Bring it from your lungs.
The reason I am so annoyed about this is I've noticed this shit. I've watched this. I listen to these guys talk on TV and in the booth about how certain guys do certain things, and I'm sitting there like, this motherfucker ain't shit, and you talking about him like he's the second coming. I can't stand him.
Mike, that's a classic case, Mike. Let's look at Dobbs, right? You got Dobbs, right?
Yep.
Take Dobbs in a situation we got here with the New York Jets.
put him on that team, what would happen?
Hello.
They'll wait for Carson. They'll get a company or call a welfare check quarterback like Wentz. Put him in there. You're gonna see the same thing you've been saying, and saying that we just ain't got no quarterback. No, we got the same dude, same system, same guys doing the same thing and getting the same results.
Exactly. They are consistent. And you know, this also brings up the issue of number one and number two. And I don't mean pissing and shitting. I mean Bryce Young and CJ Stroud. I want to go to our Dean of Generals on the Joint Chiefs of Pass, General Fred Whitty. Professor, I noticed when Carolina took Bryce Young, obviously they could have took anybody they wanted. You've seen Stroud and you've seen Young. And I have to ask respectfully, and good evening, why? Not W, not X, but why? As opposed to DJ Stroud and good evening.
Michael? I went to an HBCU. Reggie went to an HBCU. Patrick, we all have HBCU experience.
Mm-hmm.
They never taught us how to explain ignorance. Especially
you ain't wrong.
Meanwhile, back at the ranch, you all talking about all these other clowns. We have with the attachment of a billionaire or a group of billionaires, somehow or another were able to take over a team from another billionaire, other billionaires, and somehow or another they found the best available player to be like Barney Rubble
right.
to Fred Flintstone. And he can't see over the line. He can't see through the line because so many guys are rushing through the gaps and chasing his ass down. He just can't get it done. Having said that, unfortunately, this team is known as the Carolina Panthers, which means they have exposure all the way across the state, not just North Carolina, South Carolina as well, and quite as it's hip, part of Tennessee, part of West Virginia. It's part of their fan base. All the way into Georgia, Alabama, and a little bit of Mississippi. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Having seen the results over the last, because this was week eight, they finally won a game. I think the jury is still out to whether or not they've actually won, because the way they screwed up, it was hard to believe there was team sorry enough in the NFL.
They're still waiting for the return from Pennsylvania to see if they actually got the win.
You got it. having sit for 15 hours yesterday at the polls during the election, I had time to ponder some of this nonsense. Needless to say, I found myself kind of lost, shall we say, because again. There were certain levels of stupidity that we were taught at HBCU. And remember, I only went to a white school 1 year in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And even going through that, 1 year, it was the worst year of my whole educational career. Even with that, there was a certain level of stupidity and ignorance you just knew to avoid. So I can't explain Carolina. I can't explain the Charlotte Hornets. Mm-hmm. Other than they, you know, other than they suck equally. But you know, but you didn't you mentioned a one young man. I think his name was Mr. Walker.
PJ Walker.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Some people here laughingly call him JJ Walker. When well, isn't it amazing that wherever he's gone, he's found success, but they didn't want to keep, even though he found success here. They gave him the boot and said, hey, we're going to bring in somebody, you know, better than him with the right kind of pedigree. The pedigree they didn't bring was height, arm strength, and the other thing that you all, you know, some of the guys you all mentioned, like Mr. Dobbs, 2 hours, maybe four. Let's be totally liberal here. Maybe 4 hours of studying the playbook for that team. He goes out and executes. That tells you he doesn't just know the playbook. He doesn't just know what this team, the team he's on is going to do and the team that he's facing is going to do. He knows football in and out. This man has studied the game from a pure football perspective in a way that most people don't, even to some of the, you know, some of these cream of the crop coaches. There's certain things they don't know, and this young man obviously knows them. Why do I say that? Look at how fast he was able to come out on the fly. No prior practice because, you know, he wasn't going to play.
Mm-hmm.
Remember?
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't going to play.
They didn't want him to play, Fred. That was the thing. It's even worse than that. They didn't want him to play. They wanted the warm body just in case. That's all. They spent the money on Kirk Cousins and his mediocre.
And at the end of the day, what did we have?
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the day, we had one of the best play games that we've seen in God knows when on any side of on anybody's field. This young man came in and saved their ass literally.
And Fred, let me add this to you. Everything you said is 100%. Let me make it 110% for you. If he'd been blonde and blue-eyed, he'd have a marketing deal already by now.
Don't get me started with that.
That's right. Don't let me get started with that nonsense.
Mike, if Levis, who's starting his first game for the Titans, gets a mayonnaise deal, Lord have mercy.
Well, you know, I don't want to lean on Fred like this, but I got to go back to the World Football League. And a young man from Auburn named Damian Craig. Now, Damian Craig does not play in the NFL. But, and I use the word mildly, but his jersey is in Canton, Ohio. Why? Because he threw for 610 yards in a fucking football game. Now, he did that playing for the old World League of American Football, and they saw it as, well, this is a revelation. No one's ever thrown for 600 yards before in the NFL. And so they got his jersey. Did they get him a job? Hell no. Did he end up on the bench of it? No. Yo, did somebody say we found our franchise quarterback? Hell no. So, Carolina, for you to perpetuate your ignorance with this nonsense, I must just say I'm not surprised. I'm sadly disappointed, but not surprised. That's what I'm impressed with.
And meanwhile, the Jets have Trevor Siemian as their backup quarterback.
Yeah.
The same. Yeah, that's what they got. That's the problem.
The reason football has become this is because the venom that spits out from the press is beyond the balance that's supposed to be there from when the season started. These guys are betting. They're betting on side pot. They're betting pot bets, and they're putting money where their mouths aren't supposed to be. They're supposed to be objective, and we know that's not happening. We know the owners are not objective. We know they're a bunch of greedy bastards, as Tony would say, and they've taken this to another level. And, or they don't really care because they've got revenue streams of the wazoo. So how are you going to gauge who's really good and who's really bad? Without doing anything else, if he will sit down for the rest of the season, C.J. Stroud has 2,200 yards passing in 8 fucking games. That's almost 300 yards a game. Now, that's mind-boggling.
And let me throw this in there. As the college season winds down, and you look for who they want to get into this league, one name you should watch for, particularly, Fred, in regards to going to someplace like Charlotte. Keep up in they have not picked out the Heisman yet, okay? But watch out for the name Bo Nix. If they don't put that boy to be the Heisman Trophy winner, to be the face of the next draft, to be drafted by like a Charlotte or someplace like that, I ain't black and I ain't sitting there. Watch
out. I love my brother because you read my mind, Patrick. When I was watching Oregon put to Colorado, I was thinking Jay Jones is sitting there watching this with a beer and a hard on because he's like, that's exactly what I want. A white boy that can go out there and whoop my ass. And no question, if it was Trevor Lawrence, he'd been pissed. But Bo Nix is exactly what Jerry Jones wants, and I think he will give up the candy store to get it. And that restaurant, if he wasn't traded before, his ass is traded now.
It's coming. It's coming. It's coming, and it's coming quick. I'm telling. Don't let Oregon get in the four for the playoffs, even if they lose. Watch out, because they tried to make him the face of Auburn, didn't work out. He went to Auburn. He left Auburn to go to Oregon to fit the style of what he can play, and this is what they got. It all goes back to what we said before. In the case of the young man at with the Panthers. He's in a system that doesn't fit with what he's about. That's part of the reason.
The kid
can play. The kid can play. Put a system in
Patrick,
the way he can play.
Where does Eric Bieniemy, after they clean house in Washington, where does Eric Bieniemy go?
I don't know. I know where he need to be, but that's another story.
I think Eric might be going to Vegas.
I'll tell about that later on.
I think he might be going to a much harder, hotter place than Vegas.
What?
I'll tell you, Vegas might give him a shot.
All right, gentlemen, there's a quarterback in North Carolina named Drake May.
Yep.
Now, he's an okay quarterback, but the way they're hyping this guy up, I guarantee that. Yes, sir.
But it's what they do. We expect it.
I don't know which is crazy. Maryland getting a new FBI building. Oh, the NFL and the gambling. And they got a brother governor in Maryland. So brother said, I told you I'd do it. FBI building in Maryland. Ain't that a hot one? They better change that damn name. The hell with Hoover, the little cross-dressing bitch. Can't stand Hoover with his cross-dressing ass.
I'm sorry.
I didn't mean to get the facts in the way of the argument. I'm sorry.
Well, you like some facts, it's true.
Rick, I pulled a D-Mac. Rick, contain your emotions.
I'm sorry, Professor. Wait, we put the Republicans' ass in Virginia. I got giddy. I'm sorry, Professor.
Well, why you at it? Let me just say it for the record.
If you can't control your emotions, I'll bring up the fact that Virginia Union will be playing in the championship game this week.
Why you didn't go there? That's just wrong, Professor. And by the way, I have credentials to the game, so the brother will be at the game Saturday. I will be there in Salem, Virginia, home of the Redneck. Oh, my God. Bring your ass out there for a sunrise, buddy. Sunset, you better be on the road. After Mountain. Hell if I'm going back 360. I ain't going that way. Hell no.
You know what?
By Jerry Falwell, you know, University? Oh, no.
We assess quarterbacks all the time, and we understand the mythos that's put behind the position. You know, leadership, all these things that are considered X factors that are in front, and they're just too many black faces for some folks. And they can't stand it, even in the disparity like they experienced in Baltimore and Philadelphia.
That's true to that.
Can somebody lay out what the real attitude is by some of these owners on these guys?
I tell you what, early yesterday, they had this thing on Undisputed with Skip Bayless. But what they've done now is, but they've carved out certain sections as a additional piece to Undisputed. They give one to Keyshawn Johnson. Go back and watch that on Facebook or on YouTube. Keyshawn lays it out exactly how it is. Keyshawn basically says the problem with these guys getting players, the right players in the right positions. From ownership to owners to players, is the fact that they're too concerned with who they get introduced. Like I told you before, who's going to the country club, who fits in at the dinner, whose cousin is somebody's cousin that they can all that
and make sure they ain't married to no white woman. If married to the white woman, that's it.
Yeah,
you can hang it up. SAC.
That can be a problem with some people not knowing if the person can play, help you win. That's what they're concerned with. That's crazy, but it's true. All those factors are involved where people are not concerned with who can help us win, no matter who and what he is.
They'd rather throw money at one of the good old boys. They ain't shit. And they call Mike
and it's called Joe Judge.
Oh yeah. And what's that clown used to be with the Raiders? Hey, look, he was so broken he couldn't even call the plays on the side. He told Coach Pierce, if you get the guys motivated, you go out there and get them motivated. He said, damn, nigga.
Yeah, please. Yeah, and that's the problem. They have guys. They have so many guys. There's so much, personally, overemphasis on quarterbacks to where the judgments are not fit to where you're getting the right people at the right time, the right place to make things happen. They're concerned about the profile and the process and what can be uniformity rather than about winning. And I see it's right here in New York. Both teams are just jacked up because of the guys who are not. They want to put in a position to be something that they're not, and that's winners. They're not.
Thank you. And look how much money they spent to not win. Gary likes to say, they gave Twinkle Toes $40 million, and he got replaced by a brother making one
eight. Unreal. Thank
one
you. Unreal. Thank
well,
you.
Aaron Rodgers, they gave Aaron Rodgers $50 million a year for 3 years. And he ain't even doing the sideline.
And he ain't going to play with two.
Hey, but Patrick, I got to ask a question. Your Jets coach, when asked about the quarterback situation, he said, oh, I'll take the fifth. I'm like, Negro, man, who is telling you what to say in the interview? Hey. Now, what are you doing? What are you doing?
I'll play the fifth. That's a good question.
You know what?
I'm going to tell you what. The Jet organization
personifies. I did throw them. Damn.
the general organization personifies too many damn suits to make a decision, not enough football people. They personify
yep.
that.
Yep.
And one of them from Richmond, he went to Lee Davis High School. Damn, brother, don't say the fifth. Don't say the fifth. Yeah, not wrong. The Dodge situation is a perfect example of that. Dodge understood this coach has X system, this coach has B system, this coach has C system. It was a matter of plug-in methodology, and then what do I want to run off of it? He identified it. He said, they run this. And he said, I'll pick the plays from this mindset, and I'll see what I got. I'll have practice with these players. I want to know from the receivers, what are their favorite patterns? Who can I count on? Who has the best hand? All that. And he sacked all those little bullets in nothing flat. He translated all that information into action. And remember, he had no room for error. That's the height of intelligence. And that's also part of what the field generals are about. And that is why Dobbs really was exemplary. Standing up to the heat of the opposition and emerging victorious.
Now, you see, keep for the rest of the season, starting the rest of the season, no matter what happens.
Well, he said it wasn't rocket science to him, so I guess he.
There you go, Fred.
He isn't rocket science.
Hey, you hit on the head. Not to him, you know.
See, the only thing I've ever disliked about this young man was the fact that he didn't catch on with the Steelers when they had him. But you still had the same problem with head coaches as well as well as coordinators and position coaches who don't understand a man that smart, and it's most especially a black man who's that smart.
That's true.
Exactly.
That's true.
There's an intimidation factor there. They was like,
that's true.
What are you doing here? You should be in a research lab or something like that. You don't have to get hurt doing this. You know, you can get one hit and that can ruin your career, or that can get one hit and your health is in question. Why are you here?
But Mike, the flip side to that is Fitzpatrick, right? You know, he spent all those years as a quarterback. He's allegedly an Ivy leaguer.
Welfare kicks.
Right, who they love to promote, correct?
There you go.
No.
That's right. Welfare checks.
Mr. Brilliant Fitzpatrick, correct? I'm hearing the discourse, and when you show up, you know, to a new team, you know, in Minnesota, and you know they have a coach who's at least open minded to. You know, put him in per se because
key
you know
point.
He wants to win games. He's got a winning streak going. Perhaps ultimately, when it comes down to it, you know they're always going to go with their best players, no matter what. You know, and if that happens, then you're going to go with that player. But it becomes you know above the X's and O's. You know, you can draw those up. Mm-hmm. If a player doesn't have any practice, he comes in, they just can't you know comprehend the telekinetic component he has with his receivers.
Mm-hmm.
You know. Hey, we're going to run this route. This is the play.
Mm-hmm.
I know your skill set. Your skill sets are in harmony with my, you know, throwing skills, and we're going to make it happen. You don't need no playbook for that shit.
That's what they need to understand. How many of them guys in the locker room said afterwards, damn, we won the fucking game. This dude is bad.
The brothers who was running under the ball, and those who are blocking for him, I mean, they got the same scheme for Cousins, but the execution is everything.
Mm-hmm.
Execution is above in real-time concepts. It's above film work. It's above strategics. It's above artificial intelligence. It's above analysis. You have to be able to execute. That's the hidden agenda. And coaches and players who can understand that telekinetic concept are the ones who are the least understood. They're called innovators. They're called these things. And a lot of the, you know, coaches, you know, who were really tremendous And, you know, you did – people were not looking through the eyes of Ed Temple when he'd seen the women athletes
mm-hmm.
he had.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't see what he's seen from his vision. They didn't see what Coach McLendon seen when he decided to implement the fast break. Forget the four mm-hmm. quarters. He's the father of the fast break. Anyone who runs up-tempo, he created the system. Eons ago. But no one was looking between his eyes, his vision, his cerebellum, you know what I mean, his frontal lobes, or what he was conceptualizing. That's what's missed. And he can never translate that to paper. He can come close. But you have to be able to look at who you're dealing with and be able to have a beyond quantum view of a human resource evaluation of who you're going to do your combinations with.
Eric,
and
they
you can't compete with that.
Eric, they want to mask it as analytics.
You can't compete with that. You can't compete with Sugar Ray Robinson the way he let his hands go.
Sure can.
That's right.
You know, that had nothing. I mean, you could train Sugar Ray. Ali, you know, you can't tell Ali how he's going to let his hands go on Liston. You can't tell Ali as a 22-year-old young man looking at Liston and all his intimidation and be utterly fearless and then execute a strategy of hands. He literally knocked him down that second fight. I mean, he made contact.
Yes,
you know,
he did.
Liston may have
yes,
overembellished, but he caught him flush.
Yes, he did.
Oh,
sure
that's
did.
An invisible punch. That's what I'm talking
yes,
about. We come out of a different dimension. What they want to do is define you. They want to
put
you in a block. They want to put you in the analytic. They can run all the 40 times. They can do all the bodyweights, all the bench presses, all that shit they want to do. But it doesn't, and they understand that the ones who win, the ones who are very good at what they do, you can't arbitrarily put them in a box.
Let me tell you something.
Let me correct one minor thing that you were saying, because I totally agree with your position. But there was a situation where he was able where Coach Mack was able to connect and communicate his thoughts, because remember he played in Germany.
To his team. To those who knew him, to the way he built out his system, and when you talk to the players, a lot of that information that they'll disclose is not really disclosed. Sure, his X and O schematics, his overview, his methodologies, yeah, you can document that, no question, absolutely not. But when you're talking about how do you, if you're in late 50s, right, when he got on this roll, you know, Martin Luther King hadn't even got warmed up yet when they were winning them national championships. And
right.
He ain't got warmed up yet. And so how do you arbitrarily take the social impact of what takes place? You got to go through the battle royale of all the HBCUs just to get in the NAIA tournament, right? They wouldn't allow multiple teams, so they had to, you know, play each other. And he came out all the time, you know. I mean,
they had to play their own national championship.
Yes, Sonny Hill was still sore from that. When I mentioned it to him, I said, shit, I should have shut up on this one. I can see the pain. And this was 30-plus years later. And he's a good brother, and he's very supportive. But it hurt him they couldn't get past those teams. And the point being, first you had to go through that war, okay? Now, how do you keep your team tight? You can't document that, but the players know. That's that telekinetic. That's that chemistry. That's that understanding of what's in the hearts of men. Then you go to this tournament, and each time there's 32 teams, you're the 32 seed. You're not one seed. Every tournament, you're the 32nd seed.
Yep.
That's right.
All right? That means that you are competing against the top teams right out the gate, back to back to back. In a hostile environment, and, you know, TSU fan support did not travel. So you were just there. The cheerleaders didn't come. They were known for that. You just brought your squad. So to go in there, prepare your team, put the meal plan together, deal with the racism, and then ball out, blow these motherfuckers out 3 straight years as a 32 seed. You go back as a defending national champ as a 32 seed. You go back again as the defending national champ as a 32 seed because of the HBCU play-in. You got bomb threats. You got emergency landing of planes, and you still go back and win. Now, That's beyond any X and O shit.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm thinking.
That's the difference. That Eric, that is the difference between basketball and football. You can dunk on somebody and say, "Ha, bitch." That's one thing right there. And from a dunk, you can hit jump shots. You can hit 1, 2, 4, 5 jump shots in a row from long distance and shut everybody the fuck up. But only in football, can you execute to such a degree that you leave no doubt. When Stroud threw that touchdown pass.
Well, you know what's interesting to that point, Mike? You're going 7-5 every game because the referees are not in your pocket.
Exactly.
Right? And there is no more judgmental call than basketball, right? Was that an offensive charge or was it a ball?
Yep.
It go either way. 99%
That's
of the
right.
time. It's going to be a judgment call. Right?
Yep.
So the thing being is, if you look at, okay, if you look at the brothers in football, 4/4 of soul was playing in that same zone area, you know, and they're going through there, and all the brothers that came pro, number one draft picks like Buchanan, Too Tall Jones out of the environment, all the Hall of Famers that came through there, raised the game up, all the scouting that came to that particular composite, you still had to have people who was networked at that leadership level and all those coaches' auspices to manage all those personalities to get that level of execution that is beyond anything in the playbook.
And that's why coaches like, I got to give credit to somebody like Jimmy Johnson, who took the Dallas Cowboys, won the 2 championships, and Jerry Jones, I mean, Jerry Jones still was him. No, it was Jimmy Johnson who understood them, brother.
It was Jimmy Johnson.
Of course.
That's why
But see, also what you get with that, you get some incredible team. You get incredible team leaders like a Michael Irvin in that locker room where he can talk to players. Charles Haley,
Very true.
So these guys are like coaches. You need those kind of individuals and people in leadership. But see, that's because they understand certain intrinsic qualities about what they're doing that's beyond X and O. So fast forward to modern day world. So you got Dobbs, they got more tech in the world. If you look at the scouting apparatuses that these professional teams have, you wonder how they ever lose a game, right? I mean, I look at this shit, I'm like, my God. I mean, you can die. I myself, from a coaching level, figured I could never be beat when I see what they have. But how do you translate that data? That's the problem. As a matter of fact, it's almost too much data, right? To find the key component. So a guy like Donald, and he has to have the IQ, and he does. But the fact he needs no snaps to do what he does, and then what happened with the Cardinals? They got shut out, I believe.
Yeah,
they did.
Rookie quarterback. 27
zip. Yep.
Yeah. Rookie quarterback.
27
zip. Yep.
You gotta look at this. You gotta look at this and understand that from a image standpoint, there's an impact that comes to this. Sometimes it's as obvious as a slam dunk, but there's also times where something as obvious as the pass from C.J. Stroud to Bell that won that game in Tampa Bay, shut everyone the fuck up. That was the moment. When Dobbs scored the winning touchdown, that was the moment. When Jalen Hurts got behind all those big asses on the Eagles' front line and did the tush push into the end zone, that was the moment. Black people have been innovative and illustrative in how they do what they do for eons.
What Eric says can be easily displayed in decisions and how they plan games.
Yes.
Correct.
Easily displayed.
Right? Mahomes is throwing from 20 different arm angles.
Mm-hmm.
You can't coach what he does.
That's true, Eric. There's going to be some coaches that you shouldn't throw that way. But it works.
Thank you.
Right. When Vic was rolling in Atlanta, right?
Yeah.
Ron Mexico himself, right? When he was rolling, you know, they called it, they had no way to call it but other than the Michael Vick experience.
And he didn't even play the playbook. He was doing it without studying the playbook.
You hear what I'm saying? I mean, Vick and Atlanta was just like, I mean, just, you know, like,
understanding. They still look at that Minnesota run he did when two guys ran through each other.
All those things and play it from a robotic level and say it's all system and playbook. But then you get Brock Purdy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And now the last three games, we've seen what's happening with that mythological, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because they were, hey, look, all we need, we can get Mr. Irrelevant, coach him up to a system and scheme, and we can roll. And then we got Ron Wilkes. Is that his first name? The brother from Carolina,
yeah,
Charlotte?
The coordinator. The coordinator.
Yeah.
Yeah, Wilkes. Okay. So Wilkes, hey, now, you know, he goes to the Niners, and he's not running his own defense. Shanahan wants this defense that goes back to Salah called the Wide Nine.
Yes.
So Shanahan is dictating the defense.
It's working right now.
Run, called the Wide Nine defense based on what Salah used to run when he was going for the new guy.
Yeah. Defense
right,
really,
and so it's not Wilkes' defense. It's what Shanahan is arbitrating for him to play. And now they, you know, what they brought Chase Young in, they're bringing all these other defensive linemen in, this, that, and to run this kind of concept. But that's not Wilkes' defense. He's trying to coach and model the Shanahan model that Shanahan wants him to coach. But he's really not coordinating.
Well, brother want a job. He got to do what he told.
And they lost three.
Well,
straight.
You know what I'm saying. I mean, we know people gonna sell out and compromise all the time. You know, but that's another story for another day. The point being is, we know that. In other words, we know those are the systemic things that take place. So, what was his name? The brother that, but Ray Rhodes. Right, Ray Rhodes.
Yep. Ray Rhodes,
yeah. Oh, man, I had a heart
Rhodes
attack
like,
dealing with that
Ray,
job.
Ray Rhodes was like, F it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was going to kill him. He was going to have a heart attack.
Ray Rhodes turned into Richard Pryor. The first year when he was, no joke, he was nominated for Coach of the Year.
Running,
he
Mike.
Was low-key. He ran it down.
Got hit by a car crossing the street. He said, damn, what else can
that, I do? That pressure got to him, and he was like, motherfucker, what are you saying to me? And the next thing you know, the mild man was gone.
He was in Green Bay, the defensive coordinator.
That's how fucked this business is, and that's what it can do to you. And that's another racial component that they don't bring up. So for black men to function and thrive in this, they have to hold on to what sanity they have, what humanity they have, and just take from that, fuck it all, and go in there and do the best they can with what they have. But you don't go in unprepared.
Hey, Mike, congratulations. Y'all beat Boston today, 106 to 103. Good job.
Thank you, brother. Thank you.
That James Harden trade really helped out. But the Knicks, oh my God, the Knicks won. Against the young phenom rookie. Spank that ass.
He's learning. He's trying to be blocked.
Yeah. He said, where did that come from?
You're trying to be blocked.
This is NBA, buddy.
Yeah.
They asked Wembanyama the difference between, you know, playing in Europe, you know, playing in, you know, in the league and stateside. He said the difference is that, you know, the NBA players, the brothers in the States, they're like predators. They play like every night, life and death.
He ain't got no beat on his body. He can just ass knocked around.
Thank you.
Well, Ralph Sampson 3.0 is what I see.
Yeah.
Oh, could have said a young man from Ohio State. I'm sorry, Patrick. I'm sorry.
No, his
brother
knees
Steve
gave out, brother.
Getting worked on.
His knees gave out. His knee was destroyed.
By the time Ralph finished, it was painful just to watch him walk.
Yeah. It was destroyed. Yeah. It's tough.
So,
it's,
Hey, but Ralph wanted to fight everybody with the Chicago Bulls when he played with the Washington Wizards. I'm like, are you kidding, Ralph?
Yeah.
You going up against the Bulls? Everybody want to whip your ass just for GP.
Yeah.
King,
that's your home boy, Reg. That's your home.
I know. I still see him driving on UVA in that white van. Oh, I'm sorry. I wasn't supposed to say that. Him driving around in a couple of vans. I'm sorry.
I want to make this one point before we go further, since we are talking about the progress of the field generals at the midpoint stage. The one guy who has been catching more hell than any of them is Lamar Jackson.
I don't know why.
I've never seen so much jealousy of this brother than with Jackson. Now, Jackson, Jackson does not have the fastest feet, but he can run. All he does is win. And all
he does
is piss people off. I want to know, who did he piss in the cornflakes? Did they react the way they did this guy?
He has no agent. His mother and them did what they wanted to do, and they are pissed. They're scared they're going to try to trend.
And then Reggie right behind that, Reggie?
Yes, sir.
He is the complete juxtaposition of how they want a quarterback to look in this league.
Yep.
In terms of his high
and don't forget he got them braids. In his ass. The crown act in reverse.
And guess what? Here's what's astonishing. With all that success he's had in this league, name a national endorsement we got. I'll wait.
None.
Well, you know, it goes back to the Edgerrin James effect. You know what I'm saying?
Edgerrin James.
Well, when he had his Hall of Fame speech, he said how he got in the Hall of Fame with braids, gold teeth, and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Else.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but you know, the interesting thing about Lamar and the black quarterback, wasn't it Tim Ryan that says the reason he was so good with the ball fake is because of his dark skin matches to football?
That's right. Remember
that? The brother ain't good with the ball fake. He's able to hide the ball that matches his skin tone, and that's how he's able to pull it off.
What Edgerrin James say? I got gold tooths. Yeah, I got gold tooths. I got braids. I ain't changing shit.
Since when does a quarterback have arms bigger than a ball?
Yeah, I mean, Ryan, we talked about ignorance now. Dude from the old Sugar Ray fights and all that shit. He's like, I think the reason he's so good with the sleight of hand is the ball matches his skin tone.
It knocks me out with all the success that young man's had in his league, and particularly with the amount of money he got with his contract. You think somebody have at least something for him naturally, something like a potato chip or a can of soda?
He live in Baltimore and he ain't got a crab commercial. That's a damn shame.
Thank you.
How about
there you go,
that? He's got a crab cake commercial. Oh,
there you go,
man, for real.
Thank you.
At the very least, a fish fry.
There you go.
Come on, man.
They ran Ray Lewis out of town when he had a barbecue. His family stole so hard, he had to shut the place down.
Shit. I mean, even Ali had a roast commercial. You think you get some roast?
Yeah, brother, you went way back. Damn. Remind me of Pete and Chad Golak. Damn. Golak, bro.
Man. It's an image-conscious business, man. The whole aspect of what the quarterback is important is built upon image to sell it as the leader, as the face of the game.
Where have you seen Mike Tomlin on anything?
There you go.
No shit.
Thank you. Not even a background of a commercial, let alone in one.
Dion taking all the commercials.
Mike won that Super Bowl his first year, and they never forgave him for it. That's really what that's about.
Yeah, that could be part of it also. That definitely could be part of it. No doubt about that. But
let's put this in its proper perspective. Reggie, set it off, brother. We get the final thoughts here.
Well, Monday, Shannon Sharp, a.k.a. the Sharp Brothers, and another Sharp, went back to his old alma mater, and HBCU week started on ESPN. Professor had a tear in my eyes because they had Virginia Union and Winston-Salem playing in the first inaugural Hall of Fame NBA game in basketball. And Stephen A. Smith, I got to give him and my man Sharp credit.
Yeah.
Showcasing our HBCUs. And Lord have mercy, the band was cranking. And anytime the band gets to cranking, white folks are like, what are the Negroes doing? What is this gyration? What is this colors? What are the tight outfits? Oh, my God. Someone put clothes on them girls. And the old man said, I need another shot. I need another shot of my man. Just let me watch a little bit longer. Let me watch a little bit longer.
And Rich.
Yes, I hate to see you.
Rich, Shannon Sharp's coach walked in front of walked right in front of the camera as he's walking out. I'm going, bruh, he's supposed to walk right in the camera. Not walking in front of the camera. I was dying.
I love my black people. I love my black people. Ain't gonna look at you like what I do? What?
Mm-hmm.
I love my black people, boy.
It was great. It was great to see. It was great to see. Yeah.
I got to give Stephen A. Smith credit for bringing HBCU down for everybody to see the greatness. And Cleo Hill looked at them with his top five list. NBA players, and they had a little attitude.
It got a little testy in there. Look at we ain't doing that, you know. And Reggie, one thing that's happened, I let me take it from your segment.
Go ahead.
I'm telling you, Shannon Sharp should be back doing NBA, NFL TV.
Yes, sir.
His brother, Sterling, should be on TV. He should,
yes, sir.
Forget Dan Olasky. Put Sterling Sharp back on television. Cause he's
Thank you. That's what happened when you got quality black men that strong black men and would say what they got to say and keep it moving. And even my man Shannon was yelling at Molly. He said, Molly, don't you understand what I'm saying? Molly. Like she always said, we're going to have a show say, what did they say?
Yeah,
just food for thought.
great to see.
Patrick.
You know, since I was 8 years old, a long time ago too, I've been a Cleveland Browns fan. There's no doubt about it. Win or lose. A lot of losing lately, but no doubt about it. But yesterday, I saw something and it hit me. I said, oh, I knew this. I was so proud. And Gary, you're going to love this. I was so proud to see the Las Vegas Raiders with the team president black, a general manager black, and a coach
yes,
black.
Sir. Yes, sir.
That really, and that's why, that's
got
why. And that's probably why they got the three of them got to talking to who's going and say, get this guy out of here, and the Raiders can win. Because once I saw the post game and saw the guys in the locker room, and I've been around Antonio Pierce when he went to Giants here. Antonio don't play. Antonio got the respect of everybody in that locker room. And the poor
he's
and this
gonna get the job, Patrick.
What?
He's gonna get the job.
Oh, you think he is?
He already got the job.
I do. Wait, they made one mistake by getting rid of the other guy. So I think the Jets are going out there this week to play them. Too bad. I'm extremely happy and proud of what they've done.
Yeah, Pierce is going to hold it down.
She ain't no joke. Not just because and I should say this, end it with this. Not just because they're coming. I know they're efficient and they know what they're doing.
Yeah, the credentials are there.
There you go. There you go. Well said.
Your new
professor.
Well, I haven't had a chance to look at the first take thing because I've been dealing with the election for the last couple of weeks, actually the last 6 weeks. We had primary and all that other kind of stuff. And young brother from Fayetteville State won. He's in his fourth term as mayor of Fayetteville.
All right. Congratulations.
And, you know, he's early to mid 40s. So he's, you know, he still has a lot of future, a lot of time in the future out there in front of him. Right. And as far as First Take goes, I get a chance to watch it probably before the weekend. I don't think I'm going to do much work Friday. But, you know, all I'll say, and I'm not rubbing it in, Reggie, all they did was show what we already knew. And it's not just about Winston-Salem State.
Yeah.
But pretty much most, you know, there's a, what I call an upper echelon of HBCUs. You know, Eric and Tennessee State, right on down the line, with all the great people that we have seen over the years, and not only coaches, players, but just alumni. You know, I'm mentoring a young lady who's in the master's program, MBA program at Fayetteville State. And one of the things I had her do was look up the other black female billionaire. And you can imagine, women, what are they teaching you when she didn't know that there was two black females born at HBCUs, one from Tennessee State, one from A&T. And one of the things I told her, hey, if you can get different, if you can make being there from A&T, you can go anywhere in the world.
That's true.
And you know, and it's the kind of thing that we have to do. I'm all for, you know, talking about Trump and all these other people who have made it being stupid. But let's talk about some of the ones who made it doing it right. That's what I try to get them to do. And on that same track, you know, we got to get beyond the glitz and glamour of First taking things like that and get down to foundation.
I'm right with doing that.
Because, you know, we had some people who went out there, and I got into it yesterday with somebody who was talking about being drugged to the polls. I said, well, I remember a few years ago, there was this lady who walked 3 or 4 days to cast the first vote in her life. And she was in South Africa. She walked, you know, 3 or 4 days just to cast the first ballot in her life. And all you got to do is get in the car. You can register online. It's a cakewalk, and you're complaining. I ain't the one for you to complain to, and you know, legally, I was wrong, but at the same time, what they going to do?
Fred, I had to say it. Excuse me, Fred. You should have talked like this. If you don't like it, deal with the aspect of what goes wrong. If you don't vote, when something happens that you don't like, too bad, it's on you.
Yep. And let me close with this. I was really proud of my own neighborhood. Because there's a group of us who've been here for 30 or more years, off, at least off and on, and we had 80% turnout.
That's great.
Most of the ones who didn't come vote,
great,
ain't been over here. And you know, we don't walk around talking about voting. We just do it. And the young lady said, well, you know everybody. That's my neighbor from behind me. That's the other one behind me. She's from across the street. He's at an angle. That's a lady from the end of the street. And we went back and forth. She said, dog, all y'all
all right.
Yep. Because you've seen the results, Fred.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to throw this in. Louisiana could have elected a black governor. Do you know the percentage of black folks came out? 29% of black folks came out. 29%.
Yep.
You get what you deserve.
Yep. And if I'm not mistaken, they flipped the state senate in Virginia.
Yes, they did.
Yes, they did.
Yes.
All Democrats.
Dallas delegates is Democratic now.
See, before hell freezes over, Reggie and his people gonna make me happy.
What team is that?
It's gonna be Reggie and Ralph Sampson as Ralph Cleese and Thomas Jefferson.
Oh, there you go. I like that one, Professor.
Tea and crumpet for him, Douglas Wilder, and Ralph.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, I agree with them.
That's just wrong.
You're my man, Reg. You're my man. You know, you're my main man over there in VA.
Thank you.
Yes, sir, all day long. And, well, you know, I agree with Fred. You know, these little, you know, self-promotion things under the guise you're going to a HBCU, you know, I mean, hey, this is my alma mater, and then get the little snippet. I remember years ago, I'm certain the brothers here, when BET was putting out content. Remember BET used to put out content?
Yeah,
was time, right? Mm-hmm. The Donnie Simpson era. How about that? You know, they used
Donnie
to put
Simpson,
out
yeah.
content. What was my man that did the news? Ed Gordon? Right,
Ed Gordon. That's right.
They put out content back then. When they were putting out content, all during that time, they used to visit HBCUs on the regular.
Mm-hmm.
That was nothing unusual. You know, and they were the first ones who really were, like, promoting and going HBCU campuses, hanging out, talking about what the life was, this, that, and the other. So, I mean, people have a short-term memory. This has not been done before. Now, you know, there's a few eras that we push the agenda. So they do their little coverage. I'm not going to knock it if you bring that little 1 hour and a half of publicity, cool. But, you know, I mean, you know, again, I'm with Fred. You know, I caught snippets of it. I couldn't stomach it because I could see so much of the self-promotion with the entities involved. But that's just who I am, right, because I'm the one that does not believe and did not believe in what was happening in Boulder. You know what I'm saying? But I'm off that right fast because I did not believe. And if you did not believe, you were called a hater. And it had nothing to do with the content of the people. It's just that, if you understand winning and you've been around some champions in so many different sports and you see how they prepare and you know what it takes to do that and you've won championships yourself at every level you competed on and coached at, you may have a small formula of what you see, right? It's back to, I can't see behind Patrick's eyes and what he evaluates. I can't see behind Eddie Robinson's eyes and what he evaluates. And so people who are winners, they don't share that sacred part of the evaluation. It's a knowingness, right? It's 100% knowingness. Now I'm going to skate away from the topic real quick. I just want to weigh on this right fast. So, you know, many years ago, not that long ago, because I work really closely with a family member of this person, I went to Pac Bell Park, right? You know, Pac Bell Park, first year where the Giants played, San Francisco Giants played, right? Mm-hmm. And they were playing the Diamondbacks. I remember Stottlemyre was pitching. Remember Stottlemyre's kid? He was on the mound, that good starting pitcher. You know, I call him Barry Bones. Bones was in the lineup. I forgot Elliot's name real quick. He played center field. He was a really good outfielder.
Yeah big afro.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Man, it's a guy. I can see him hit the home run that game. But real quick, you know, and real quickly there, and I was invited there, and the person who provided the tickets for the family member was Johnny B. Baker, a.k.a. Dusty Baker, right?
Johnny B. Baker.
And they won. They won the pennant their first year at Pac Bell Park. That was a big thing in the Bay Area. It wasn't like going to a Yankee game or a Met game. You know how the sound effects are totally different rolling up. I mean, this is a wine and cheese crowd, right? I'm like, damn. They got the pin on the line tonight, and everyone's cool as hell going to the game, right? That was the first thing that struck me. You know, I was really different, Pastor, coming from the East Coast. I'm like, shit. It's kind of late. I mean, it's like a wine and cheese crowd there. And Peter McGowan was the owner at the time, you know, of the Giants. So, you know, based on that. So we go to the game, right, you know, and they won the game, obviously, to win the pennant. And, you know, you go back to the managerial room, you know, to talk to Johnny B. Baker, and he's having, you know, a special brew out of a Dixie cup. I thought that was real 100% and shit. I'm like, damn, they're pouring some Jameson in the Dixie cups up in this piece. And, you know, and the thing about it is, you know, I mean, this guy, you know, Dusty Baker, as he's known, you know, commonly, has been associated with so much incredible baseball history, you know, and he's been an incredible baseball manager. And he, you know, recently announced his retirement, really kind of quiet on what his accomplishments have been. And what he's been able to do from a leadership level.
They know.
When he took the job with the Houston Astros, that was right off the filming stuff, right?
Yeah.
All the illegal taping and illegal sign thing, and everyone's hating on the Astros, thinking they cheated to win, and that's how they got there. But then he was able to successfully have them in the hunt, in the playoffs, in the World Series pretty consecutively. And then, you know, overcoming some health issues he had in Chicago when he was managing the Cubs, to take on a 162-game season he's done the last few years, right? That's not easy. All the travel, day games, the heat, managing, putting a lineup together every single day, not counting, you know, preseason, right, spring league, probably play 20 games, and then go to the play. He's like pretty much had managed 200 games the last few years. And so he walked away like pretty much on the quiet tip. He finished, but what a phenomenal accomplishment. What a phenomenal baseball achievement. He was on deck when Hank Aaron hit his 715.
That's right. I saw the game.
You know?
Yeah.
And he was the manager when Barry Bonds went for 73.
Yep.
You know, so not to account the influence, the leadership, a brother in control, a brother in leadership, a brother managing multiple teams, done it at really high level. And that's what the great super great accomplishments. Everything we share is still not covering all the amazing attributes he's had as a player, manager, he's won at every level. But, yeah, I just want to say Johnny B. Baker, a.k.a. Dusty, good brother, you know, outstanding person. Hospitality showed a young guy who, you know, who went to the game, you know, firsthand and seen that. The humility he had after he won the game, the proactiveness, man. So I can't, you know, speak enough, but I feel really responsible that, you know, we got to shed some light on the phenomenal baseball contributions of the brother, the man, the person of leadership qualities of a higher level, Dusty Baker, a.k.a. Johnny B. Baker.
And Eric, and Eric, he's going back to retire to his winery.
Yeah.
There you go. You know, I mean, real quickly to that, what he would do, he's a hunter, right? So the guy's a hunter. You know, he likes to, you know, he's a gamesmanship type person, fishing, hunting, this thing and another. And what he would do from time to time, they would, you know, in here in NorCal, there's a lot of, you know, hunting grounds. So they would hunt pheasant, ducks, all this kind of stuff like that. Then they would have a special restaurant, an Asian-centered restaurant, do a whole layout of all their, you know, game that they counter, and it would serve up the game and have this whole game event, game feeding session. Now, I never went, per se, you know, but the brothers that went, I got invited, but the brothers that did that, this thing. So, you know, it's just a variety of things of interest, man. But, you know, I knew he took care of people around him who was close to him in ways that was like, you know, really resourceful, that spoke to the man. So, yeah, Dusty Baker was, you can't do what he did and be a fake.
True.
Thank you. Thank you. Good brother. My only Dusty Baker experience, I met him in Vancouver at a club called Campus. It was famous up and down the West Coast. He was partying for a little bit, but he was chill party. He was more was enjoying everything around him rather than being part of it, and was very gracious. He spent time talking, and there was a pasta bar in the club, and we all sat down to a nice meal and just shot the shit. Cool brother.
Exactly.
I like him a lot.
Exactly.
Cool brother. Gary.
Yes, sir.
Well, there's two teams in the National Football League, not the long league. These two teams are going in opposite directions. One's on the East Coast, the other on the West Coast. The Las Vegas Raiders defeated the New York Football Giants 30-6. last Sunday night. It was the old school against the new school. It was old buddy against new buddy.
There you go.
It was the
invasion
of the Raiders into the players while the Giants administration closed the door on their players in New Jersey. The striking difference between the two teams. The Raiders are 4-5 right now. The Giants are 2-7.
It'll be 500 on Sunday.
If the Raiders get back, Raiders are getting back in the playoffs with their new administration. As my brother said earlier, we have 3 black executives with the Raiders. Vice President Sandra Douglas, Morgan, General Manager Kim Kelly, and black head coach Antonio Pierce. The Oakland Raiders mean business. Meanwhile, Twinkle Toes and the Giants are going backwards. I rest my case.
Yeah, you should.
We're going to go on Friday. Friday, we're going to do Memorial. Veterans Day on Friday. Veterans Day is at 4 o'clock. And then Saturday at 1 o'clock, the regular show.
Hey, G, do me a favor, man. Make sure you get Jimmy G out those cat houses.
Yeah, for real.
Well, Jimmy G ain't going to be playing.
For real.
That's probably why he hurt.
Lamar Odom, give him the scoop, man.
Well, you know, Gary, you hit it right on the head. Shout out to all the vets who put in time and put sweat to ass. We love you and respect you. You know, if you got a chance, buy a drink for one of them, or at least raise
the glass. Yes, sir.
Having said all that, what we talked about earlier with the quarterbacks.
Yes, sir.
You know, we know how many years brothers had dirt kicked in their face, you know, literally and figuratively about playing this position. They couldn't stand the fact that they were smart enough to do this. They always could do it. After Bear Bryant got his ass whipped by Bam Cunningham, etc., he said, let me get my own nigga. And that's exactly
I gotta get me
did.
One. I got to get me one.
Yes, sir.
Now they're saying, let me get my own. Well, enough of them have their own where they're saying, we don't need no more of them because we don't want to see black men playing for the championship each year.
Yeah.
We want to make money. We want to do all that. We want to keep the revenue cash flowing. But we don't like the fact that they're going to represent the game. So we'll
Michael Lewis.
Yes, sir.
As of this moment, 6 of the 8 divisions are led by our field generals.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
That is Michael Lewis Ingram, everyone, the quarterback whisperer.
We know that, my brother, and we know that they know. That's what they can't stand. They know Patrick Mahomes and all the angles he throws from. It's just his game expanded. They know that Jalen Hurts shaking off that slight little nick to the
game. Yeah, buddy.
And in that game, that's just part of what he does. They know that Lamar Jackson and all his gifts coming off on the field, it bugs the fuck out of him that he succeeds at the level that they do. Because they can't take credit for him. Well, here's a warning for you for the next half of the season. I'm protecting these brothers. Me going to put hex on you motherfuckers that keep trying to fuck with the brothers. So I got to break out this spell and let you know that the brothers are here for real.
Make